Dead on Daofan Mountain. Written by Real Ghost and read by Fens and Marshes for day 17 of Jiangcheng Love Month. She does not know who saved her from the pyre, but she knows who didn't. She knows it wasn't him, because twice a year he comes up the mountain and mourns her at her ancestors' cemetery. There is no plaque for her there, so he writes her name in the soil with his finger. After he leaves, the characters in the sand remain until the rain or the wind comes. He knows of this place because she took him here, years ago. Most people don't know about it. It is, of course, a strange thing to watch a man mourn her while she is alive, hiding behind the trees. The first time she spots him, she is scared, thinking that perhaps they have found out she got away and sent him to kill her. The second time, she becomes unsure if maybe he is right and she is dead but does not know it. She stops eating for a few days after that to see if she grows weak and thin. She does, so it is him who is wrong. Wenxing guesses that Jiang Wanyin comes on the day of her death, but she does not know what significance the second day holds for him or for herself. It's not her birthday, the seasons tell her. She counts the days between his visits, partly because they provide structure, partly so she can take care to not be discovered. Every time she watches Jiang Wanyin creep up the dusty road, a part of her begs her to approach him and ask him so many things. She hears nothing of the world outside, after all. Better not, she tells herself. It is too soon. After 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, it is still too soon. The cave behind the shrine of the Dancing Fairy is where she lives now. It's where she woke up after her execution. The place had been furnished, some necessities, a change of clothes and provisions provided. By and by, she runs out of the food left for her, but she manages to live off what the mountain has to give. Wenxing has fashioned a bow, and she has always been an excellent archer, so she hunts, she forages, and she drinks water from the spring. She weaves baskets from willow twigs and the tall stems of nettles. Because she only has the one pair of boots, she makes slippers from plaited grass that she wears in the summer. If she had paper and ink, she could make a lexicon of all the plants found on the mountain. She starts drawing on the pale stones from the riverbed with charcoal from the fireplace, but they become too numerous and pile up and her notes get smudged. So at some point she throws them out again. She will have to use her memory. In a way, solitude is liberating. Wenxing is dependent on no one's but her own moods, relies on her own skill and is responsible for herself only. She feels more capable and stronger than she ever has and relishes in the sense of control this life gives her that living around other people would never allow. Daofan Mountain is a much friendlier place than the burial mound, and it is easier to feed only one mouth than a dozen. She misses her brother and her friend, but they most likely are just as gone in the world below as they are up here. Not after long, Wenxing stops wondering who kept her alive and to what avail. She was ready to accept her death as punishment, so she can accept this life just as well. At least she isn't running anymore. She passes the days focusing on the task at hand, seeing that she is fed and clothed and warm. If she ever loses patience and living becomes too hard, well, she only has herself to kill. Nobody will grieve who is not already grieving. Thank you. The first few years, Jiang Wenyin merely burns incense. Just one. Later, he begins to leave the most luxurious foods on the stone steps. One time, he shows up in the pouring rain and kneels until the pastries are soaked and ruined. When he finally leaves so Wenqing can run and get them, she still eats them, wet as they are. After everything he did and didn't do, this is the time she gets truly angry at him. Such a shame about those biscuits. She laughs loudly at herself for thinking it. Sometimes Jiang Wenyin cries and Wenqing guesses it cannot be just for her. He never says anything, just looks grim. He still looks good, Wenqing must admit. Perhaps anyone would look good to her at this point, but she wouldn't know. He is the only person she sees and only from afar, too. There is nobody to judge her but herself if she sometimes lets herself wallow in the what-ifs for an afternoon. It sometimes happens after he has come and gone. Once he brings a lotus blossom, already shriveled as they tend to wilt quickly once they are cut from their muddy roots. He looks down on the pitiful, browning flower and apologizes to the imaginary dead woman, and that is the one time he says anything at all. His sorry haunts Wenqing after that. And then it happens. He comes on the wrong day, and she is standing right there, and he sees her blatantly between the shrubbery of hawthorn with its fat red berries. She does not move, just stares back. She thinks that maybe she miscounted, but she is meticulous at keeping track of time. Maybe his schedule does not allow him to come 2 days later like he is supposed to. Anyway, he is there, and so is she, and their eyes meet, and they wait. He must think she is a figment of his imagination, because at some point he sighs and proceeds towards the cemetery. She does not follow him this time, only goes at dusk to fetch the almond pastries and lotus seeds he has left. The next day she decides to leave the mountain once it gets warmer. When spring comes, she washes her clothes and packs her knife, her mortar and her pestle, some herbs, the dried meats and mushrooms into a bundle. She bathes in the spring, braids her hair, and ties her bedding into a roll to carry on her back, brings a few of her baskets to sell. She pays her respects at her ancestors' shrine one last time, and ascends down the winding path. In the first village, she sells her baskets and some of her dried goods to a merchant. She asks about an apothecary or healer nearby. The woman asks what it is about, because she only knows a midwife. Wenqing tells her she merely wants to sell her medicinal herbs. The merchant gives her directions. At the end of the day, Wenqing has a little bit of money, but she doesn't want to spend it all on an in-room right away, and the weather is mild, so she sleeps in an orchard. She figures she can spend spring and summer like this, and eventually buy tools and settle down as a healer when it gets colder. Or keep wondering, why not? She is very grateful she has learned a practical skill, and not just cultivation and sword fighting. She starts listening to the gossip every now and then. Gossip is still gossip, still full of fanciful ideas, and quite often it brings up painful memories because gossip is also rather cruel. The common people are mostly oblivious to cultivator politics, but they are still fond of Yiling Lao Tzu. They say he died and that he is back, that he really isn't, that it was just another imposter. Wenqing is surprised by none of it. Still her feet take her to Yiling of all places, where she hears about the ghost general. They say he too is back. The next thing they'll say is that he really isn't, so Wenqing keeps collecting her herbs in the woods and by the roadside and sells them to the townsfolk. She has saved enough money to sleep at an inn every once in a while. It is autumn when she reaches Yunping and the whole town is in uproar. The streets are swarming with cultivators, low-ranking disciples from every sect, but mostly Jin. Although there are no familiar faces, she decides it is not good and moves on. She is resigned to the fact that she is walking towards Lotus Pier by now. She stops in the adjacent town and treats herself to fish cakes from a street vendor. She books a cozy little room in the inn and bathes before she goes to bed. She has been dead for more than 16 years. The world has moved on without her, but it looks more or less the same. Wenqing has never been to Lotus Pier. Not to the old one that her clan destroyed, and neither to the new one that Jiang Wenyin and Jiang Yanli built after the war. Tomorrow, Wen Xing will go to him. He is the only one that she knows where to find, so where else would she go? She will make up her mind about what happens then once she knows what's happened while she was on the mountain. She has brought the dry, wilted lotus. This time, she will let him know she is alive and learn who else is and who is dead. And then, as she pulls up the blanket, it occurs to Wen Xing what day it is, that it is tomorrow that Xiang Wan Yin is due at Da Fan Mountain, and she hopes they will not miss each other. End of story. Thank you for listening.